Senate Finance. I call this meeting to order. Today is the State of the University Address, as given by University President Mark Hamilton. This is, I believe, the second State of the University Address?
Third
University Address that has been given to a joint meeting of the House and Senate Finance Committees. Our Constitution created the university almost as a separate branch of government, so it is fitting that it does have this address, almost as the courts do and the governor does as well. So, brief bio from Representative Mulder, the co-chair of finance in the House, but I'm just, for the record, going to recognize the finance members at the table here. Representative Davies from House Finance, Senator Wilken, President Senator Ward, Senator Lehman, Representative Hudson, Senator Co-Chair Donnelly, Senator Green, Senator Osterman, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Olson from Senate Finance Committee, as well as Representative Moses at the table, and Representative Harris, you're a House Finance member as well, excuse me, and Representative Lancaster as well, a House Finance member, and seated at the table with us is Representative Hudson, and did I miss someone? And Representative Moses, yes. Oh, as well, House Finance. Anyway, that does the rather lengthy roll call of a joint House and Senate Finance Committee. At this point, if Chairman Mulder from House Finance would give a brief bio on President Hamilton.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Also, for the record, before we begin, I noticed in the audience Representative Foster, Representative Coghill, Representative Stevens, Representative Wilson, Representative Cisna, Representative Kapsner, Senator Phillips, and I think that does it all. And Representative McGuire.
That's right.
And Bud, excuse me, Bud. I have written down. Who else?
Joe Hayes.
There's a lot. Hide him back there behind the camera. Well, President Hamilton, you see we've got about half of the legislature here, so. And I think you've got your whole student body behind you.
Enrollment is here, isn't it?
We're in the largest committee.
This is way down.
President Hamilton received his Bachelor of Science degree from the United States Military Academy at West Point in 1967 and his Master of Arts degree in English Literature from Florida State University in Tallahassee in 1973. President Hamilton is also a graduate of the Armed Forces Staff College in Norfolk, Virginia and the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Most people don't realize that General Hamilton is in his third stint here in Alaska. He was in 1988 through 90. He was commander of the Division of Artillery at Fort Richardson, posted near and dear to my heart. From 92 to 93, he was chief of staff of Alaska Command at Elmendorf Air Force Base. And President Hamilton had been at Fort Knox, Kentucky since early 97. And was head of recruiting there for the Army and was a two-star general prior to coming to the University of Alaska. What most Alaskans don't realize is that when I accepted the offer to come to Alaska, then General Hamilton was on his way for his third star and declined it in preference for coming to the University of Alaska and was benefited from that. One of the first efforts or steps that President Hamilton took when joining the university was the development of the Alaska Scholars Program, and I hope to hear a little more about that today, but it appears to be a successful venture, and under President Hamilton's leadership, the university certainly has a renewed vigor. I prepared the members, President Hamilton, I have installed seat belts on their seats, so with that, let it roll. President Hamilton.
Thank you, sir. I am Mark Hamilton, the President of the University of Alaska, and with permission of the Chair, I'd just like to make a brief introduction. I'm surrounded by bosses here. First is my wife, Patty. And Regent Mary Jane Fate and Josh Horace. And the wonderful array of bright faces you see behind you is the Coalition of Student Leaders, who were meeting up here. I can tell you their meeting was scheduled before this meeting, and it is a pleasant and delightful coincidence that they could be here. Many of you have met with the students over the last several days, and I just want to thank you for taking that time. Most of you will meet with them from time to time throughout the session. I really believe that it ought to be a great point of pride for this state that we certainly have the most accessible group of legislators in the country. It's inconceivable that in another state these students could actually hope to meet with their elected representatives. It's part of their education, and it's something we ought to be terribly proud of. Members of the committee, 2 weeks short of exactly 2 years ago, I came before you for the first time. I showed you a simple chart that demonstrated that the university had lost the ability to contribute to its own funding, had lost the ability to respond to the growing needs of the state of Alaska. Implicit in that presentation was the idea that if the university got additional funds, it would begin to bear more the cost of service to the state. Because of the efforts of the governor, the overwhelming bipartisan support of the legislature, we are moving forward. Let me tell you what you've done. Between 1996 and 1999, the university was able to generate about $6.4 million a year in addition to general funds. Now, of that amount, only about $100,000 was available to supplement general funding. In contrast, we estimate in this year alone we will generate $26 million in additional funds, of which as much as $5 million will be available to apply to university requirements. And before you ask, of course, we have factored that into our request. By supporting the request for this year, we believe we can generate as much as $36 million in additional funds with a proportional amount applicable to state needs. Now, if all these restricted dollars were directly substitutable, we wouldn't have to ask you for any more increases. But of course, they're not. As a matter of fact, they're absolutely dependent on general funds to generate them. That's what's happened here. Your commitment of increased general funds generated those additional dollars. In that sense, the $36 million additional dollars in receipt authority will not be forthcoming without the general fund increase. It's important to understand that this is not all a matter of leverage, although that's certainly part of it. The reason that enrollment is up and tuition is up and federal receipts are up and university receipts are up and indirect cost recovery is up and private giving is up and corporate giving is up is because you made a bold and important statement last year. A substantial increase in a very tough budget year. What it said was, Alaska will support their university. The echoes of that commitment are huge. You have turned this university around, partially with dollars, but primarily from the courage of your commitment. Let me tell you what you've done. Enrollment is up, and it's going up more. Up for the first time since 1994. And this year, we actually hired recruiters. What a concept. Retention increases will follow the adding of counselors and the offering of additional programs. 20% of the youngsters who leave the University of Alaska for another source of education do so because we don't offer the courses they want. Student services are up. Let me tell you one story. Last year at a single campus, we had a backlog of 1,000 transcripts to be processed. We were taking up to 6 months to do it, and in the case of some of our military friends, more complicated transcripts, as much as a year. Today, I report to you the backlog is zero. The processing time is 3 weeks, normally coincident with the registration period. Morale is up. Pride is up. Let me tell you what you've done in teacher education. Hand in glove with your insistence that we have quality schools and quality education, we've talked to, worked with school teachers, principals, and superintendents. Ask them, what's our role? In simple terms, we must provide the quality teachers, principals, and superintendents to run the quality schools. We've begun the fifth year MAT program and are developing innovative curricula to address the need for improvements in elementary educators. Now let me note that the elementary educators produced by the University of Alaska are highly respected and highly sought throughout the state. But we're working with education professionals to determine what additional skills we need for the ever-increasing responsibilities placed on our teachers. They have asked us for more effort in specialized endorsements for early childhood development, special ed teachers, and an expansion of the continuing education for teachers and school administrators. We're asking your continued support this year to enable us to meet these needs. Let me tell you what you've done in healthcare. The greatest demand, the largest growing job market in the state. Last year, you supported the extension of the two-year RN program to Fairbanks and to Kodiak. The Anchorage campus developed a distance delivery method model that will be extended to additional communities in the future. Again, working with industry, we've identified the pressing needs in the allied health areas, from radiologists to dental assistants. Now, there's no way in the short term for us to be able to react to all of these enormous health needs in the state. So we have asked the profession to help us to prioritize so that we can get at the most critical shortage. Most of these programs are developed at the Anchorage campus, but are designed to be offered throughout the state, and we're looking to put forth a one-year program to Anchorage plus 4 or 5 additional locations in the state with these monies we've asked for. Let me tell you what you've done in information technology. Once again, we've gone to the professionals, gone to the state, gone to the practitioners with the IT consortium. They've worked with us to determine the critical IT infrastructure the state requires and the trained employees that their industry will hire. Their priorities initially, their highest priorities, are not at the degree level, but at the IT worker level. And there are high-paying jobs all over this state. We've jump-started just such a program at UAS. Intense, professional, and designed specifically to meet industry-identified needs. In the area of natural resources, we are aware that much of Alaska's future is going to reflect Alaska's great past. We're rich in natural resources, and we require the homegrown leadership and research to continue to manage and benefit from them. From fisheries to forests, mining and marine advisories, both management and marketing, and we're asking for funds to pursue them. In engineering, we're expanding programs both in Anchorage and Fairbanks, working very closely together to begin to provide the engineers needed in this state. Commissioner Joe Perkins in Transportation said he could hire every graduate we put out. And even then, there would be fierce competition. As in nearly every profession, we have to do more. We have a substantial request under the category of maintaining a solid foundation. In this category are funds for meeting our contractual pay raises approved by you last year. Note that even with significantly increased faculty deliver the programs that we promised, we're actually requesting marginally less money in this year for meeting these contractual requirements. Why? Because you've enabled us to generate monies that we can apply. In the area of inflation, we are asking for less than 0.5% of our budget base to cover just those extraordinary inflationary areas in library and in IT software licensing and hardware upgrade. These are double-digit level annual inflations. The rest of the inflation we are able to address with monies that you've enabled us to generate. We're asking for money to institute an important long-term efficiency called convergence, to take the separate pipes that run video and voice and data and converge them into a single instrument that can handle all media. Long-term efficiencies are significant. Now, in this category, as in every category, we're asking for funds that we will match and overmatch by leveraging state funds to attract and raise funds of our own. Just a note on the capital budget. I know we'll take this up in great detail in subcommittee, but I would just note it's comprised of about two-thirds of fixing up and reconditioning existing facilities and two significant new projects in the form of a Lena Point research facility and the University Museum. Both of these projects are highly leveraged. NOAA funds on the Lena Point side and more than half of the museum costs already raised by private efforts. I want to talk about accountability. First, specifics. Every initiative you funded last year, every program supported by your increased funding is laid out on the web. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, accessible by you or anybody else. You can look there to see the budget as requested, the expenditures to date, projected, the hiring codes of faculty or staff associated, updated with narrative on the 8th of the month, every other month, tracking the progress, highlighting the activities, a full page addressing missions and measures for each initiative, and a page addressing the ongoing partnerships and contacts that will keep us on track with what Alaskans asked us to do and what we told you we would do. At the university, accountability is not a buzzword. It's not just a website. It's a commitment to you and to the people of this state. But accountability is bigger than budget numbers. It entails listening to the direction of state leaders and of governing boards, and in my case, the Board of Regents. And I will tell you that those voices ring loud. Senator Donnelly, you asked me a question almost 2 years ago that highlighted your emphasis on money going to instruction. Let me report to you on the dispersal of the funds in the initiative areas. The FY00 initiatives went 100% to instruction and instructional support. Last year's initiatives, 76.5% directly to instruction and instructional support. My request this year is 63% in that instruction category. Representative Bundy has been a clear voice in support of additional emphasis on two-year programs in Voc Tech. You'll be happy to know that of the 00 initiatives, 48.5% of the money went to two-year programs and Voc Tech programs. In FY01, 32% plus 100% of 289 funding. And in our request, 41.8% is two-year and Voc Tech programs. Some of you have asked about partnerships. They continue to be our strength. APIC, ASHNA Health Consortium, IT Consortium, schools, and the State School Board. They inform us, and they keep us on track. Representative Davies asked about research and what we were going to do to be more responsive to the needs of the state. Let me tell you what you've done in that area. Last year, the legislature gave the university $1 million to compete in a program called EPSCoR, Experimental Program to Stimulate Competitive Research. Nine states submitted programs to the National Science Foundation. Alaska's was overwhelmingly voted number one submission. We were funded at $3.5 million a year for the next 3 years to pursue programs directly germane to Alaska. Infrastructure and systems for coal regions, which will explore the special requirements for roads and for harbors in an area that has such extraordinary temperature changes and much of which exists in seismically unstable locations. We'll explore engineering design strategies and development of materials. High latitude environments and contaminants to trace the very difficult problems associated with the pooling of water following the irregular channels caused by permafrost. In both of these areas, this program allows us to extend research opportunities to the Anchorage campus and the Juneau campus, as well as our traditional research center in Fairbanks. Representative Mulder asked me last year if these programs were likely to attract new students. And as I've already told you, I'm happy to tell you that the first time since 1994, enrollment at the University of Alaska is up. And Representative Mulder also chided me last year that I'd failed to highlight some of the achievements by the university. Let me just give you a few. It's always gratifying to have external voices brag about you. From UAS's external accreditation report, quote, the evaluation team commends UAS for the enthusiastic commitment to student learning that is evident throughout the institution. Faculty give extra time to student concerns. Administrators give up prime office space to student programs. And students confirm that their voice is heard and respected by faculty, staff, and administrators. Just one more. Quote, the team commends UAS for its distance delivery learning initiatives and the attention it gives to individual students, student support, and curriculum quality. There are many more commendations, but let me move to UAA. Again, from an external accreditation review team. Quote, the committee commends UAA for vigorously pursuing the mission of expanded partnerships with the community. As UAA seeks to engage its talent and knowledge for the future of Alaska and for its success in creating viable partnerships with local community services, education, industry, and the arts. And one more. Given the challenge of the past decade, the high level of morale and energy on the UAA campus is remarkable. The committee commends UAA faculty, staff, and students and administrators for their positive attitude, outlook, confidence in the future of their institution, and their determination to make UAA a university of first choice. UAF, the rifle team, brought home their second consecutive national championship. The team members maintained a cumulative grade point average of 3.8. Member of that team, Melissa Malloy, not only won the national individual championship, but represented the United States of America at the Sydney Olympics. Students from UAF and their partners in Japan at Tokai University successfully launched a rocket to an altitude of 50 miles, over 10 times the previous high. Our faculty, in addition to their numerous personal awards, competitive grants, and publications, have distinguished itself in another way. The expansion of our IT courses and of statewide offerings have been a challenge to our faculty, and they have responded fabulously. They are involved in intensive self-development with the same kind of passions and interests that allowed them to earn their terminal degrees in the first place. Anyone who still holds the outlandish notion that faculty somehow see themselves apart from the mainstream need to see this effort and the enormous time they have spent making sure that they are prepared to lead and to teach, both in the classroom and beyond. There are a number of very promising economic opportunities on the horizon. This first decade of the new century may see gas pipeline or pipelines, expansion of the railroad. Certainly, we will insist that fiber optic cable accompany each of those projects. When they come to pass, in whatever configuration, we will be faced in this first decade with an era of development not witnessed since the 1800s, when we pushed the railroads west, where, by the way, they took the picture of the wrong event. It wasn't the joining of the rails and the driving of the Golden Spike. It was the guy in the background climbing the telegraph wire and just splicing together a piece of communication that made this a single nation. The coincident arrival of communication, transportation, and energy means development. Now, there are a lot of Alaskans who say, I'm not interested in a whole bunch of growth. And let me tell you, I understand. In a state that has no income tax, growth means more people to use the roads, use the schools, and collect the permanent fund. Now, how do you have unavoidable development without massive growth? It's a simple formula. You train Alaskans to take the key jobs, and your university is the instrument of that resolution. We've learned already that we can't wait for the big projects to come to us. By then, the key jobs have been taken. The infrastructure is overwhelmed and built reactively. There are foundations for the future to be laid, both in educational infrastructure and in physical infrastructure. I know that there are far-sighted individuals in this body who have already begun to study the capital needs, asking the hard questions of timing. Should this be done before the tremendous construction competition and high prices of the boom? Should it be done during? Should we wait till after? And the answer, of course, is yes. Laying that course will be as important an answer to the plaguing questions of long-term fiscal stability as any juggling of fiscal options. The university stands ready to participate and inform in these key deliberations. Let me quote you from the chairman of my Board of Regents, Mike Burns. Higher education yields prosperity, yes. But it also opens doors of learning, imagination, and understanding that give us the chance to know more and do more to better comprehend our own lives and our neighbors. I'd like to end with a challenging story I recently came across. What is rich? Asked a successful merchant banker of the Persian Gulf. Rich is education. Expertise, technology. Rich is knowing. We have money, yes, but we are not rich. We are like the child who inherits money from a father he never knew. He was not brought up to spend it. He has it in his hands. He does not know how to use it. If you do not know how to spend money, you are not rich. We are not rich, he concludes. Are you rich if your children go elsewhere to school? Are you rich if you must import all of your critical expertise? Are you rich if you're not in control of your own destiny? I don't think so. There's only one way to change that situation. If you will make this university strong, your university will make you rich. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, President Hamilton. We've been joined by some other members of the body, Representative Williams from he's co-chair of House Finance, as well as Representative Halcrow, Senator Terrio, Representative Bundy, and Representative Curtula. At this time, if we could have entertain questions from the co-chairs of finance members, Senator Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Hamilton, thank you for that overview. And as you know, and perhaps some of the others know, you and I have spent several meetings in the last weekend together going over some of this. I appreciate hearing it again, some of this again. Last year, when we gave additional funding, there were at least five areas that I recall that popped out that I, you know, that we wanted to respond to. There were logistics, voc ed, nursing and other healthcare, teacher training, and then an area that is important to me, the Arctic and mining engineering and those. And you've talked today about, at least you briefly touched, I heard, on four of those, but I didn't hear discussion about logistics and your coordination with the military, how that's progressing. Is there something you could say about that? And, Mr. Chairman, I have two other quick ones after that in follow-up, if I could.
Well, just very quickly, the progress there has been remarkable. We have set up the master's degree program. It is absolutely full. We have begun as well, because we've described this as a kind of a pyramid. You understand there's only X amount of jobs at the top of that. We move down to the next level, which is the one where the military is most excited about, to begin to train the material handlers and the accountants and shippers and this kind of a program. This program, we've been to Hawaii twice with the Pacific Command. They see Alaska as their center of global logistics support, just as UPS and FedEx have discovered us for the commercial end of this thing. Enormous possibilities in extending this program via distance across the Pacific. That program is well ahead of our expectations at each level, and be delighted to give you a very thorough and formal accounting for that.
Okay, just a couple of the quick ones. We have student leaders here. Can I see, are there any here who are attending the university under the Alaska Scholars Program? Hands way up, please. If two in this group, good. I commend you for that. Is it working out for you? Good. The other one is, how is the student investment fund? How did it do this past year? I know you've come in other years and given us some very exhilarating reports of how that the student investment fund is.
You did a hell of a lot better than I did, I can tell you that. It is another remarkable number given the year, but I don't have it. It certainly is not going to be their 109% or whatever the heck they ended up with last year, but beating the market to death continually. Yeah.
Right.
I'll get you that exact number.
Okay, and then the final one is on partnerships. You just mentioned partnerships are up. I know that Tom Rasmussen, when he died, and actually before he died, left a lot of money for the university, and I'm aware of other investments that are up. Can you just give us numbers in terms of the investment, the matching investments by business and individuals?
The final total of Mr. Rasmussen's gift will exceed $20 million. It is, of course, designated. It will go to very specific projects as he wished, and that obviously is our responsibility to follow those wishes. As part of the compact, of course, you're aware that we have received monies of approximately $2.5 million from Phillips and BP. That will be an annual gift that will be dependent on a formula on oil prices and the like, but a good planning number would be about $2.5 million. That particular sum of money we have tentatively aimed toward the rather broad area, I grant you, of making sure that this university participates fully in the exploration of economic development opportunities in the state of Alaska.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Hamilton, welcome one more time.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate your full accounting for the university. And one area, though, I'd like to hear a little bit more about, and we've touched on a little bit, is the scholars program. Two-part question. One, can you give us a little more about the numbers of how it's doing? And secondly, I understand that you're funding that out of the land grant earnings. How long can you continue to do that? What's the status of the base funding for the program?
Okay, well, it's two different stories, because obviously the better the answer to the first one is, then the worse the answer to the second one is. We're tracking about 40% right now of the top 10% of the state. The numbers, have to firm them up for after the spring enrollment, but 550, 560 of Alaska's brightest youngsters come to the university. Obviously, that will grow. The fact is that using the monies from the Natural Resource Fund, we'll go broke next year. That doesn't terrify me, because this is the kind of a program where I think you just pull out all stops and go forward and figure out the financing of it later. It's such a tremendous investment in the state. I will come to this body next year and ask for funding. It is a point of ignominy that we are the only state in the nation that offers neither merit-based nor needs-based scholarships. And I think we're going to have to step up to the plate, and I think this is a proven program that's an appropriate place to break out of that particular distinction. They're fabulous. They changed the university in a very... This isn't the first time we've had bright kids come to the university, but once you get a certain density, it changes the classroom. And there's, well, I'm telling you, you were a professor. When you have one or two bright kids with which to exchange, that's one experience. When you have three or four in a class, it changes the whole atmosphere of it. So it's just been a wonderful boon. And, of course, it means we're keeping them. It means they're going back and saying, you know, this university is a pretty darn good deal. I mean, there's small classes, research opportunities for undergraduates. So they really have become our first line of advertisement. As the numbers grow, you'll see more and more of these. And you'll see more and more involved. These are my student leaders. More and more of our student leaders, as these youngsters progress through the system. They've only been here 2 years, maybe not quite ready to step up to a leadership role, except in some rare cases. But you'll see more and more of that. You'll see more and more graduates, therefore more and more people. 80% plus of our graduates stay in the state. So this is a grand investment long term.
Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President, it's good to have you back again. You just spoke of the Scholars Program in relation to how do those numbers compare from previous years in terms of numbers that we're getting in other words, attracting, and also how are we doing in relation to retention of those scholars?
We got about 270 scholars the first time, about 350 the second time, against the same base,
right,
of about 750 in the top 10%. Their retention far exceeds, as you would expect, it far exceeds the retention of the school, of the student body as a whole. It's in the low 70s. It's very difficult to compare that number across the country. And we've tried to do that, but it's so difficult to find a scenario that says that it's not a SAT score, ACT score kind of entrance, that it's 10% of the graduating class of every high school in the state. It just changes the kind of equality of preparation that you would sort out with like an ACT score or something like that. So it's hard to find a peer to do that. But we have the baseline. We know that we've retained about 72%, and then it went to about 74. So it's going in the right direction. As long as we track it and it's going up, I think we're doing very well.
One of the, and I asked the question because I noticed within your budget request is a focus not only on recruiters, but also on counselors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, people before me had to make some very tough decisions, and I won't criticize them. I wasn't here. Didn't walk in those shoes. But in one of the efforts to maintain programs, we really mortgaged our future in terms of recruitment and in terms of retention. We don't have the number of counselors that we ought to have by any means. We have no recruiters. I mean, if you can imagine, Anchorage, our largest campus in our largest population center in the state, hired this year their first recruiter. We just got rid of everybody who wasn't absolutely essential to the teaching mission and knowingly mortgaged our future, and we're catching that up. This will change things dramatically when we start to get folks out there. Same is true in the development area. We have no people in the development area statewide to go out and to try to raise additional funds. We were able to secure, as a matter of fact, this too is from the Rasmussen Foundation, a jump start to fund development people across the state system. A phased out, because the theory is, of course, that development people ought to ultimately be able to generate the money. But it was a wonderful addition, and it too will begin to show dividends. I think we ought to be very, very optimistic about that, and I absolutely believe what I told you before. I mean, if you think about this, I mean, we only have this money since July. So if I told you that all these wonderful things have happened because of the unbelievable, clever way that we have that I've invested this money, I mean, it would be BS. What has happened here is not the result of recruiters, and it's not the result of developers, and not the result of counselors. It is the fact that this body made a vote of confidence in university. It rippled throughout this state. That's why the students came. That's why they're staying. That's why people are giving, and people like to join a winner. Now, we're going to see a lot more results from those investments. Right now, we are riding a great deal on just the kind of tidal wave of hope that that you made happen last year. It's going to get better.
President Hamilton, what is the status on the deferred maintenance money, the appropriations that haven't been spent yet?
Right. This is an area that we dived into with a passion. Again, with no attempt at all to be pejorative. We had no capital planners in the system at all. There used to be, at statewide, 9 people, including an architect. Long ago lost to staff reductions during the tough years. We put together a team to attack this maintenance issue. Matter of fact, Senator Wilkins has asked for a full accounting of this, and we have that document. If not delivered, I've seen it. It physically exists. It lays out the expenditure of $54 million over the next 3 years, with the kinds of planning that ensure we understand the cost, understand the sequencing of this. When you renovate a major classroom, you've got yourself a fascinating little management issue there. Where do those classes meet? Where do those labs meet? When you do a dorm, where do those folks go? You've got to sequence it just right. That planning is in place. And those dollars will be spent by April, 3 years, so 38 months from now.
Thank you. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Hamilton, as you know by the Constitution, this body allocates a lump sum of money to the university in which you and the Board of Regents then decide how to spend it. Could you just give us a primer on the thought behind that? Is there a formula that allocates among campuses? Talk a little bit to that.
Okay, let me address that in two ways. One, the idea of a formula is one that has been tried really throughout the country, and the fact is that several states actually do apply a formula. It's tough. It's very, very complex. It has to do with the amount of research, the number of upper division classes, the diversity of programs offered, whether it's in the physical sciences or whether it's in the humanities, and extraordinarily difficult to execute even in a very homogeneous kind of four-year institution. We have explored this a couple of times, and what it ends up with is that the way the funds currently being distributed is essentially a wash to what we've discovered. Let me tell you the real danger that comes from this, that I face from time to time, from well-meaning people who want to do a very simple approach of student credit hour vice budget or student headcount vice budget. Our campuses are all important. They all do different jobs. Let me just give you an example of this. If you took away our three major campuses, if you held them aside and looked at all of our, what I refer to as community campuses, our community campuses account for about a third of our headcount and a fourth of our student credit hours. But they only get an eighth of our budget. Now, a simple formula would say you've got to double or triple the amount of money going to the rural campuses. And although I could get an amen from several folks back here, it's not my intent to do that. It's more difficult than that. Let me give you a second thought, though, because I think it's important. On these initiative funds, these are, I've described them as academic jump balls. It's here, you identify for me the needs of the state, the industrial or agency partner. You identify for me how this particular course can be offered across more than one campus. What kind of research opportunities it might be able to engender, and the programs succeed or fail on their own merits. I don't care which campus initiates the program. The programs that are the best for the state win. So you see a situation where when you lead with logistics and healthcare and teacher education, and then you look and you say, well, my gosh, most of this initiative money is going to the Anchorage campus. This is not because Fairbanks has done something terrible or Juneau, very, very aggressive and agile campus, gets a lot more than any kind of preconceived. These are just jump balls. Best program wins. And in our initiative areas, if all of the programs went to a single campus, it frankly wouldn't bother me at all. I would hope it would bother some of the other campuses, but I think that's the way to do it. I have no preconceived notion. I have no formula. I don't think formulas work. I think you reward the program that serves the state, and we'll be in good shape.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President, I appreciate the comments that you made about the rural campuses, but in your presentation of accomplishments and for last year and for next year on the Jumpstart funds, you didn't mention too many things about rural campuses except for Kodiak. We have several of them, Chukchi, Kuskokwim, Bristol Bay, and others, and can you give a brief report of what you've been able to accomplish in those rural colleges, rural campuses, and for last year and for the remainder of this year and for 2022?
Well, let me promise you that we could list a great many of them. I'm not sure I can rehearse them for you at the moment. I'll get you a list of all of these points of pride. Matsu has picked up a $600,000 federal grant to enable them to pursue programs in kind of small business development. Chukchi is an interesting story because it had to do, it was motivated, frankly, by legislative intent from this committee. that said, you get together with the local school district and the local chamber of commerce, the technology center, and your campus, and you decide how we can do the most efficient presentation of courses. This has attracted participation from the Native Corporation, this is from Red Dog Mine, and generated, from the Chuck G perspective at least, about 450 additional student credit hours specifically in these technology areas. It's resulting in a lot more efficient kind of program out there. The great beauty of our community campuses is their ability to react to the needs of that particular campus. Kodiak has several very, very inspiring stories about the response to their two-year technology program. It's in fisheries and it is in the aerospace industry. Courses are full. We continue to be asked for even more courses. There really are a number more that I can't rehearse off the top of my head.
One simple question, if I could. How many of the rural campuses have you been able to attend since you became president?
Oh, all of them.
All of them.
Of course.
Representative Lancaster?
President Hamilton, you mentioned recruiters, and now our children are finally staying here and learning and staying in the state. I'm interested in what we do outside to bring children and students from outside of our borders, South 48 or other countries.
Yeah, the fact is we don't do much today. We don't even have in-state recruiters. Out-of-state recruiting is a particular challenge. You'd love to get individuals in. We do attract some. As a matter of fact, was up significantly at the Fairbanks campus this year, out-of-state students. These tend to be attracted by the reputation of our courses. Recruiting them is difficult. It needs to be focused. It needs to be managed. That's a lot of territory to cover. There's a lot of competition, and the pool shrinks very quickly. I mean, understand, 82% of kids who go to college in the state they graduated high school from. So now you're down to 18. Well, about 80% of them go to school within about 250 miles. You know, they want to be able to drive home. I mean, that's basically what seems to motivate. So you're dealing with a very, very small pool of individuals. It makes it harder to kind of find them. So we have chosen, and I hope wisely, to concentrate on the state first. There simply is no better place to recruit than at a high school. You know, you have on a couple of acres dozens or hundreds of individuals who are potentially students at your university. We will increase that over time. Advertisements now available on the internet are of some value. Advertisement as a whole across any part of the country is a very expensive proposition. So we want to make sure we're focused, understand the market that we want, and go after it. It is desirable. To date, I'm telling you, I have concentrated, I hope wisely, on the domestic market. But we'll go out there more aggressively as the years go on.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, my question somewhat follows Representative Lancaster's, and I've been interested in the percentage of the graduates that are college-bound in Alaska on an annual basis that actually choose Alaska. To give us some sort of a running measure of how well the honors program and some of those things are happening, and if you have something like that, that would really help us.
I do indeed, and I'll give you a whole copy of this. It was one of the missions and measures originally agreed upon with the House Finance Committee. And what we know now, and one of the measures we're tracking, is that we capture about 22% of Alaska high school graduates. So of the number of individuals who graduated last year from high school, 22% are attending the University of Alaska. Now, this measurement, I think if it's, you know, if it's going up, we probably should be happy. We probably need to refine this a little bit because, of course, it depends on the baseline that I think you mentioned. It depends greatly on what percentage of our high school graduates are choosing to go to college. And we happen to have very, very low percentage. So we're capturing a marginally higher percentage of a very small pool. I think as we move with the quality school initiatives and get some of this greater attention on learning and put a standard up there that motivates more people, I think, frankly, we're going to see that number, that percentage of Alaska high school graduates who are college-bound increase, and obviously if we can continue to improve our market share, if you will, this portends good things for the university. But we do, in fact, have that sheet, and this would be available to you anytime you want.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Senator Ward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming today, too. I think it was about 5 years ago, the first time that I had a meeting with the people from the university. You weren't in that meeting, but at that time, they told me that they were having some trouble, and it led later on to Representative Con Bundy's exit exam. But they told me that they were having trouble with high school students that had graduated that were trying to come to the university that could not do high school work.
Absolutely.
And that is the very reason why I voted for the exit exam. Now, it has been in effect, so I would like to know, do you still have that problem? Has the exit exam helped with that? Is it helping with that? And just some dialogue on that, because it was the university that caused myself and many other people at this table to take that action. Because we were churning out, in the university's opinion, high school graduates that couldn't do high school work.
Well, Senator, you're absolutely correct that a significant number of individuals who come to the University of Alaska with a high school diploma have to take remedial courses, and that would certainly be proof positive that they were not, in our estimation, at the level they ought to be to begin their post-secondary education. Those numbers are very significant. There actually has been, I just know because I recall the data point, there actually has been a reduction in the number of remedial courses being taken. The cause of that, I am not prepared to tell you. It's reasonable to assume that a greater emphasis on academic standard at the high school level would result in students, graduates, being better prepared for entry to college. It certainly is reasonable. I can't imagine any other kind of result. I would offer you this, to given that you are clearly interested in this, and it does sound like an interesting data point, we can track for you the percentage of our incoming Alaskan high school graduates who take remedial courses. And that may prove to be a nice metric to discover the degree to which this emphasis on quality affects that. There actually has been a dip, I just remember noting as I went through, but whether there's a cause and effect, I think it's a bit early to tell. But the problem, if it is a problem, the symptom certainly exists. We have a huge percentage who have to take remedial courses. Huge percentage.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ward.
Thank you. I would be very interested in that. That comes back to a second portion of it, which I participated in causing a bill to go through the legislature. I helped along with some other people. The voter for it was to give an additional land grant to the university in order to raise additional funds to take care of this problem. What's the status of that?
I'm sorry, sir. I don't think I completely understand the question. The status of additional land grant funds to the university?
The additional land that we tried to give to the university.
Well, certainly you're aware of the land bill that passed last year, and that is a very important step forward in terms of the amount of land of the university. I can tell you of the land we have, the current value in our land grant trust funds, about $112 million. It frees for distribution each year. After inflation proofing, about $5 million. So that's kind of the magnitude of where we are now. This is a pitiable amount compared with other land grant institutions, and I believe you know Senator Murkowski is very often fond of referring to us as a land grant institution with no land. Now, we went some way toward fixing that in this body last year, and with the potential that amount of land might be parlayed into a federal grant that Senator Murkowski has worked on for years. Obviously, it would help, but one of the things that's terribly important to understand about land, and I know you know this, but let me rehearse it for you anyway, is when you talk about land selections and litigations, and then land preparations and bids and litigations, and then selling, and then investing, and then inflation proving, you know, you're talking about 15, 20 years. I mean, I'm sure you're not going to be here by the time you actually begin to produce for that. So our land is important to long term, and we need to keep an eye on that to help kind of the next generation. But it's in almost no form does it apply to the short or midterm needs.
One last thing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that is why in 1982, when I first came to the legislature, we tried to give 400,000 acres to the university so we could look 15 years out. And if we would have, maybe we wouldn't have quite the situation we have now. But I hope 15 years from now, people aren't saying, well, gosh, it takes 15 years for the land to be developed. This is a land-based university. And you're right. And Senator Murkowski's right. He's the only one in the nation that doesn't have land. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ward. Any other questions from the committee? President Hamilton, thank you very much for coming before the committee. It's a pleasure, and it's been very informative. I hope the members of the committee and other members from the different bodies will keep your comments in mind as we deliberate not only funding for the university, but other issues that may affect you.
Thank you.
That the committee is adjourned. Thank you.